Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
How's it?
Good morning.
Hi there.
How you guys doing?
All right, bud. How are you?
I'm lekker, man.
Nice.
I'm well slept.
Your solid 8 hours?
Yeah, I think so.
Your REM cycles?
I think I got there. Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering in to this lovely video store in what is still a nippy cold Joburg, but
yeah,
we're getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Nearly spring.
Yes.
We've got ourselves a G-Force today.
Good morning.
Who is an editor,
yeah,
and very much the producer of this podcast, the award-winning producer.
And his name is Graham.
His name is Graham, sorry, if those who don't know. And we've got ourselves a Cole Matthews.
Thank you.
And you are calling yourself a?
I'm calling myself a video copywriter.
A video copywriter. Right. We're not working at the video store. And my name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. But we give up our busy lives once a week to work behind the counter of this video store. And if you're wandering around looking at stuff, please listen in on our fantastic chat.
Yes.
What have we got to talk about today? What are our main points?
I watched Bring Her Back and The Naked Gun last week.
Nice.
Wow, two remarkably different movies.
Yeah. Couldn't be further apart if you tried.
Yeah.
In the world of cinema, the polar opposites. I've got a really good Netflix limited series to talk about.
Cool.
One of the biggies that will sort of be dominating everyone's attention for the next week or two before something else comes along.
Yeah.
But it's really good.
Nice.
This is the Eric Bana Netflix show,
okay.
Untamed. Which is beautiful.
Cool.
G-Force?
I don't have anything.
Okay.
Just here for the vibes.
But just here for the vibes.
Yeah.
And just here to give us some good facts.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're good for.
amongst
many things, but your special skill is the, what do you call it? Just the good facts.
Sure.
You had a name for it at one point.
Do I? Did I? I don't remember.
Oh, I forget. Okay. Maybe I'm making that
go
up.
Go back to the archives.
Today's shift is brought to us by the lovely people at Sony who want everyone to know, and we also just want everyone to know that the film Caught Stealing is coming at the end of this month.
Nice.
We're now in August. I have seen this coming months away. This is the new Darren Aronofsky.
Yeah.
Now, for those who don't know, that's Requiem for a Dream, Mother,
Noah,
yeah.
The Whale. This is a very serious, very cool director.
Yeah.
One of the more exciting directors operating today. Mm. And Caught Stealing looks a bit fun. It's set in sort of a grunge era 90s. Mm. It's got Austin Butler in it. It's got Zoe Kravitz.
Matt Smith.
Yeah.
Matt Smith. Who's Matt Smith?
Matt Smith's the punk guy with the weird hair.
Oh, okay. I recognize his face. And it looks cool.
Yeah.
It looks fun. A band like Idols. For those who know and love that band, like they're on the soundtrack. So for me, like this cannot be a more Bioscope movie in my eyes. So I'm excited about
Brilliant.
It. Cool. Yeah, so the last Friday of August,
nice.
29th.
Cool.
Yeah, is when it hits cinemas around the world, including the Bioscope, including South Africa, which is exciting.
Just after your birthday.
Just after my birthday.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. No, I would be... into my 40s by that point. we're going to always kick things off with a little, hey, did you guys see?
Yeah.
Our little newsflash chat.
Mm.
Have you got something to kick us off?
Sure, I can kick us off. Where are we going to start? Let's go with, hey, did you guys see? So y'all remember how Barbie came along and made a big money?
A big splash.
Yeah.
Made big money, and then Mattel was like, let's make 40 movies.
About toys. That's
so,
the lesson they learned from that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we know what the first one is. It's going to be Hot Wheels. So they went, make Barbie for boys. Make Barbie for boys. Do Barbie for boys right now. And it's going to be directed by John Chu.
Okay.
So director of Wicked. Is going to be directing the Hot Wheels movie.
He said something's going to be like Cars with talking cars.
who knows, dude? Who knows what the hell this is going to be?
Yeah, it's so unremarkable.
Hot Wheels don't represent and stand for important pillars of what it means to be a man.
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just a little car.
Yeah, Barbie can be an astronaut. She could be the secretary. What can a Hot Wheel be? A car.
There was no point where males were like, we don't like the way that you are representing cars by how you are representing these cars.
Yes.
Like, this is making me feel emasculated as a man.
Yeah.
Like, there was never any of that politics. It was just like vroom vroom. So let's hope the movie is injected.
Yeah, who knows what it's something. Gonna be. Is it gonna be Fast and the Furious? Is it gonna be Speed Racer? Is it gonna be cars, like you said?
All I'm thinking of is that Kool-Aid skit in the studio.
Oh, right.
And they're making the Kool-Aid movie because Barbie made a Barbie movie. Yes. And it feels like the exact same thing. Yeah. They're going to cast Ice Cube as Hot Wheel.
It's interesting that it's coming from the director of Wicked.
Yeah, it's odd.
Yeah.
Suppose it's got to do with his pitch.
Yeah, probably.
If he made one.
And he's done action movies before, I suppose. So.
Okay.
Who knows?
You heard it here first.
Yeah. What a choice.
Should I go?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, did you guys see, we got a first look at a movie called Song Sung Blue. Do you know anything about this?
No.
Okay.
It's an incomplete sentence, but go for it.
It is also a Neil Diamond song, and that's got something to do with the plot.
Right.
Okay, so this has just been announced. It's going to be Christmas this year.
Yeah.
So it's soon, but it's still got a little while away. But I've got a feeling that when this movie comes out around Christmas this year, it's going to be a biggie.
All right.
All right. It is Kate Hudson.
Okay.
And Hugh Jackman.
Right.
Singing.
Hi.
Okay.
Kate Hudson's back.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And what it is it seems to be, two down on their luck performers start a Neil Diamond cover band.
Right.
Okay. That's cool.
And I'm privy to a certain kind of conversation when I talk to the distributors of these films.
Right.
Obviously, on the day that the movie comes out, you watch it first as the public. Maybe a day or two before, as the press or the media, you go to a press or media screening.
Yeah.
I'm now lucky enough to go to exhibitor screenings, which happened just before that.
Where subtle
just
brag.
Me and a few other exhibitors. But obviously, before that, you have the distributors themselves that get to watch them internally to decide whether or not they're going to take this movie or not.
Right.
And so these guys have seen Song Sung Blue, and the one guy was just gushing about it.
Okay.
Going like, it's heartfelt, it's beautiful. And so that's why I wanted to just put the little flag in the sand, a little bit like, you know, what this Hot Wheels movie could be. It's like, this could be a lovely, heartwarming, cool great movie.
All right.
Now we're going to have Hugh Jackman singing Neil Diamond.
Right.
Sweet Caroline. Him and his vibrato.
His vibrato, dude. He can't help himself.
Six,
Have you got one?
I've got one. Yep. It's not so much a factoid as it is a question.
Yeah.
Hey, did you guys see that there's on Amazon Prime, there's a remake of War of the Worlds with Ice Cube?
I heard about this. Like a found footage.
What?
It's like a found footage movie.
Oh my God. I never went that deep into it, but I was just perplexed by the choice where I just like saw the title War of the Worlds in Ice Cube's face.
A new film?
Yeah. Yes. It's like a streaming movie.
Yeah.
And what do you mean by found footage?
Found footage, you know, like the like someone's actually like filming it, like the character in the movie is like the one filming it, like Cloverfield or Blair Witch.
Okay.
It's sort of like found footage. Also those movies that are like Zoom. There's like a couple of movies that they've made that are like people having like Zoom chats and that sort of thing.
The screen movies.
They're like mixed mediaing like that sort of thing into a world.
Yeah, that
it's a cool idea, but apparently it's terrible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That tracks.
The movie that you were talking about just a second ago,
there's
been a few, but the one that was significant was Searching.
Yes.
Yes.
Where the whole movie takes place on screens.
Yeah.
Either like phone, Zoom.
Mm.
Yeah. It was a very interesting movie.
Yeah.
And I was totally in.
Cool.
But yeah, you got to
I think
be...
that might have been the first film we went to with the like press screeners.
Yeah. It was. We somehow got on the Sony list.
Okay.
I think it was a Sony movie, and we somehow got on that list. And I remember that was the start of being exposed to the fact that these screenings exist.
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
But I mean, another subtle brag. I'm at this point now where I'm like, I can't remember the last time I paid for a movie ticket.
Yeah.
And it was like 3 or 4 years ago. Anyways. GeForce?
Hey, did you guys see the trailer for Eternity?
No. What's that?
It looks interesting. So it's an A24 film. And it's, what's her name? The other Olsen, Elizabeth Olsen.
Okay.
Elizabeth Olsen, Miles Teller, and that British actor.
I can't remember.
Callum Turner is his name. Yeah. So the story is they're all dead. They've all died, and they're in this, like, halfway place, right, where you have a week to pick your eternity.
Yes.
You have a week to, like, decide where it is you're going to spend literally eternity.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth Olsen's character has to pick who she's going to spend eternity with, because she has her husband, who she spent the last, like, 50 years or whatever married to.
Yeah, that's Miles Teller. Yeah.
And then she had another husband before that who died in, I'm assuming, like, World War II or something like that. So they were only married for, like, literally days.
Yes.
And he's been waiting there this whole time until she got there. And now she has to pick between the old love from, you know, literally decades ago and this person she spent her entire life with and who she's going to spend eternity with.
Yeah, no,
looks
I did
interesting.
See that. Yeah, it does look cool.
Yeah.
It reminds me of some comment I saw about Titanic, which was like
how
the old lady, you know, is going to throw away like the millions that that necklace is worth.
Yes.
Just because she like bonched a dude for like 3 days on a boat.
Right.
It's like a dude she's never met before.
Yeah.
She spent 3 days with him.
Yeah.
Had some hot sex in the backseat of a car. And it's like now she's going to throw away millions for this dude.
And then also, like, she dies at the end, and we see her, like, heaven, quote-unquote, where she's back on the Titanic with Jack.
Yeah.
But so, like, where's the husband she spent forever with? Is he just, like, he's just waiting wherever he... Because they're, like, she goes to where they met, so is he waiting in some sort of version of wherever they met where she's never going to show up?
He's not involved, brother. Yeah. She's just going to be with Jack forever.
Yes.
No, but I had that kind of a relationship once in my life. I had a sort of a this kind of... holiday relationship. It was with a girl from America.
Right.
When she came over, we had this week and it was magical.
Yes.
And then she met me in Spain once and we spent a week together. And it's like, there was just a point near the end of that week in Spain where I was like, what would it be like if we were just together every day? Like, would I actually be as in to this relationship? Not to say that I wouldn't, but it was just like... There's something to be said for you know, the holiday romance and the reality of it.
Yeah.
That's what I love so much about High Fidelity.
Right.
The huge sort of turning point in that movie is when he's like, you always see the fancy panties, you know, because that comes out in date one, date two. And that's a fantasy because after a while, you will always get the granny panties.
Right.
And he's like, I want the granny panties. I need to be okay with that. I want that.
Yeah.
They're so well written. But it's like, that's the take home.
Right.
Everyone. Okay. Hey, did you guys see that The Bioscope is nominated for Best Cinema in the Best of Joburg Awards?
Oh, cool.
Nice.
Very nice.
We were last year and we asked a few friends to vote. And we lost to Monte Cassino because I think they've got the database.
Jesus.
I think they've got the database to sort of they could probably just say to everyone working in Monte Cassino, like, place the following votes.
Yeah,
but
people who don't know what they're talking about.
But I really want to take it this year.
Cool.
Because it would be heartbreaking to lose to Monte Cassino.
To a cinema that absolutely sucks.
Yeah,
I've never had a good screening in.
But basically, when you walk into these, you know, public-facing restaurants or spaces or bars, I've always seen that Best of Joburg certificate on the wall, and I've always gone, how the fuck do you get that? How do you do that? And, of course, the reality of any awards is they don't just sit around and go, hey, do you want an Oscar?
Yes.
You have to sometimes pay. You have to sometimes nominate yourself. You have to campaign to get these awards. And so I tasked our publicist about 2 years ago to go, please find out how we can do this.
Yeah.
And it actually took her quite a while, but she eventually was like, okay, here's the window. I'll make sure you're included. and one was votes.
Right. Have you sent an emailer out?
I'm going to put it in this week's mailer.
Good.
And we have advertised it on social media, and cool. I've got all my friends to do it. So we'll have a link in this. You've got to vote for a bunch of other stuff in this sort of living in Joburg category.
I didn't vote for anything else because I didn't have an opinion on anything else on that list.
No, but you need to have it qualify. You've got to...
Don't joke. You've got to just vote for one.
You can't just vote for the one.
So then I have to know like whether Casalinga is better than like Andichio is.
Yeah. But no, but it's... No, but just... For the one, I was like, best gym, and I sort of, and I was like, I don't have a best gym, but then I saw the, one of the nominees was called like Barbell Buddies, and I was like, that one.
Best name.
The best name wins.
I'm going for the one that isn't the multinational,
So yeah, so it would be lovely. It's a little bit silly, but it's just one of those like.
I mean, it's well deserved. The Bioscope is the best. Yeah.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
It's wonderful.
Anything else?
Do you want to go?
Sure. I don't know if we spoke about this on an episode. I haven't listened to yet. Sorry. but James Cameron is adapting a book, nonfiction book called The Ghost of Hiroshima into a film.
Oh, I have heard about this.
And this is before the book's been released, he's got the rights to the book. Okay. It's a nonfiction book called Last Train from Hiroshima, The Survivors Leave the Hell of World War II. The film focuses on the story of Tsutomu Yamaguchi, who survived both the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombings.
Right.
And the interesting thing about this is very recently, in press somewhere, he called out Christopher Nolan for being a coward for not showing the effects of the bomb in Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Oppenheimer. He was like, that was a cowardly move. Like, you should have done it, kind of thing. So he clearly he's got an opinion on what you have to see to represent the tragedy of the event. Where I don't agree, I think we all understood the impact.
That's not what Oppenheimer's about.
And that, exactly.
That also just reeks of being a comment taken taken out of context to some degree.
Right.
Like maybe he just said it as an aside. You know, maybe.
But then everyone chose to make it the story.
And then remember the childhood game Broken Telephone?
Yes.
By the time it gets to us, it's like, he was bashing him, calling him out.
James Cameron takes on Christopher Nolan. But it's going to be interesting to see what he does with that kind of story.
Is he directing it himself?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so it's going to be in like 20 years.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
It's a busy man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been lucky enough to see Hiroshima.
Oh, like the real place.
The real place.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was at the near the end of quite a long band tour. We'd done a week of Australia, and then now in this week of Japan. So we were quite tired, just physically, but having the fucking best time. Like, Japan was incredible, and it was so cool to play these shows, including in Hiroshima.
Yeah.
But as we walked to, there's one building that they've kept, and it's a destroyed building that they are maintaining. As we walked towards that, I just started crying.
Right.
Sure, man.
Like, as a fucking grown man, I just started crying.
Wow.
But the overwhelming sense of that peace park is one of peace. Right. It's one of, like, let's just not fucking let this happen again.
Yeah.
It's not fuck the Americans. It's not,
right.
You know, there's no political agenda. It's just, like, there's an eternal flame. There's, like, a sort of a plaza. And it's just like, let's just not fucking let this happen.
Yeah.
Sure.
Let's just have peace on earth, please. Because it's something like 200,000 people were obliterated in seconds. Like, it's just abominable.
Fuck's sake.
Yeah. But the crazy part is, the fact that the Americans showed the Japanese.
Yeah.
They brought them to the test sites. They said, we have this. We will set this off. And the Japanese were like, fuck you. And they're like, we'll do it.
Yeah.
We'll do it. We'll do it. And they were like, fuck you.
Yeah, I see.
So that's why there's this very humbling sense from the Japanese where they're like, let's just not.
They were going to drop a third bomb on Tokyo.
Hectic.
Sure, man. Yeah. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
And wasn't there a dude that got bombed in the one place and then he survived?
Yeah, that's this guy.
That's the dude.
That's the guy who's the story's about.
And then he goes to Nagasaki and gets bombed again.
He survived two atomic bombs.
Like,
the most badass person that's ever lived.
Right. Yeah. Shit. All right. Cool. G-Force, one more?
One more. Speaking of James Cameron, we got to talk about, hey, did you guys see the trailer for Avatar?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Finally, I'm surprised it's taken them so long to release a trailer for this.
Yes.
Like the marketing seems late.
Coming out this year in December, right?
Yeah.
Yay, Avatar, my birthday.
Woo. Yeah.
Is it just me or does it not look as good CGI wise?
We've seen this world twice, so it's kind of just like, yeah. what else can we see?
Are we just a bit meh about it?
I think we've normalized to just like photorealistic CGI.
Yeah, no, to the point where I actually saw it and was like, because you were saying, Cole, that there was so much AI generated spammy fake trailers, and you don't quite know whether you're watching a rehash of the old one or new ones, or someone's put some shit in between.
Yeah.
But it almost felt like I was like, "Is this the real one?"
Right.
Oh, wild. Yeah.
And I don't know whether my brain has just seen too much, as you said,
desensitized.
But it didn't look remarkably different. I was expecting exactly. Like, now we're going to see the fire people.
Mm.
They are apparently like far more sort of evil or worse than the water folk, because obviously the first one was the forest folk.
Yeah.
Then we were in the more water bound. What are they called? Naboo.
Na'vi.
And now we're going to see the fire people.
Yes.
And it didn't feel remarkably different to me.
It should have been more of a story tease than a visual tease. I suppose it is a teaser, right? It's not a theatrical trailer.
Yeah.
If that distinction still exists, but it should have been like, this is how the story progresses past the second one, because I think just showing us the world again is kind of just like, we know what we're going to get.
Yeah, I mean, the question is how story driven is it? Like, how narrative? Like,
is it just going to be Pocahontas 3?
Yeah,
that's never been Avatar's strong suit.
No, it's not. They're not about the storytelling.
Exactly.
You know,
but well, that's what was lovely about even 2 is going cool. There's this great like water technology that they've invented, and look how fucking cool it looks. But this one just didn't look remarkable.
Yeah.
It also makes sense that, okay, it's a few months out, but they would still be working on visual effects at this point.
Yes.
And so it just didn't feel, I don't know, didn't wow me.
Mm. That's wild that we reached the point where
$2 billion dollars of visual effects.
Yeah, like that level of visual effects can just be like, eh.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
It's fascinating that
we have to
that
give
point.
It to Jim, dude. That guy always knocks it out of the park, you know? In terms of the box office, it always
I wish it to be great.
Yeah. I'm sure it's going to make... Like, there's this like group of people who for some reason really don't want Avatar to be successful.
Oh.
Right? So despite the fact that Avatar is the most successful film of all time, they'll be like, but it didn't make a cultural impact. They're like, move the goalposts of what success means. So because it didn't make a cultural impact, the sequel's not going to be successful.
And then
the sequel comes along and becomes the third most successful movie of all time. And then they go, oh, but it didn't make a cultural impact.
It's like, fuck off, dudes.
Yeah. So this one's going to make $2 billion.
And
exactly.
It's like the White House saying that South Park isn't relevant.
Yeah.
But they're releasing a statement as the White House about South Park.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Tell that to what was that bar that was going to be opened in Joburg that was going to be theme Everstar. Remember that?
No.
No.
Oh my god, one of the gems of the internet.
Yeah.
Was a video that went viral in the early days of like YouTube. About a nightclub in Rivonia that was going to be themed around the world of Avatar.
Right.
It was going to be called Everstar. It was around for like a month or two.
Right.
Until Universal or wherever, I don't know who they were with.
Fox.
Fox.
Were like, sorry, no. You know, you can't do this. But the guy who did the video was this like, real Joburg, like stereotype greaseball of a dude, saying things like, "It'll be a 3D reality." Oh, it was fucking hilarious.
Reality's already 3D, bud.
Exactly. That was the joke. Was like, "Fuck, man, you already exist in real life." And we're gonna have so many drinks. It'll look like a bottle store. And it was like,
is that the marketing?
That's the selling point.
We must, honestly, if we can find it on YouTube.
I literally just made a note to see if I can find
that
video.
We must find it. It was like, you know, with star wipes and fucking.
Oh, magical.
And it
looked like a bottle star.
Yeah. No, it was gorgeous. And it was just so, so close to being like a parody video, but yes. It wasn't.
Wow.
And it was just, you know, like the Vernon Cuckamore kind of character where South Africa just looks at one dude and is like, what? This is fucking hilarious. So yeah, magical. That is out there.
Incredible.
And there was an Avatar-themed nightclub in Rivonia for about a year.
Unreal.
Yeah.
If it was a gay club, I would have gone. If I got gay Navi, then I would have been like, this is a vibe. Like my Navi maid cafe. Let's go.
Oh, lovely. All right. Let's talk about these movies that you saw.
Cool.
Hell yeah. So first is Bring Her Back, I guess.
Yeah. Mm. And I'm sorry I couldn't join for that. So your armpit remained safe. This is the same guys that did Talk to Me.
Yeah.
Danny Filippo and Michael Filippo.
Which is exciting to me. And I like the idea that these young like YouTubers... Yeah. Are expanding and becoming these filmmakers. I think Talk to Me was so cool.
Mm.
And it was testament to the fact that with clever planning and writing, you could make a cool horror movie anywhere in the world. They were in Australia.
Yeah.
And then this was their next project. They're sort of, you know, it's always interesting to see what these kind of breakaway hit filmmakers do next.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the overriding impression from everyone that this was just like gut-wrenchingly horrific in a horror way.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I don't know whether I want to fucking put myself through that.
Yeah.
And so you went.
Absolutely, I went. The back of the box is that two siblings in Australia, their father dies in the shower and they are put up for adoption or they are taken into a foster situation with Sally Hawkins.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And are introduced to their new sibling, her child.
Right.
She had a child that drowned in a swimming pool and died. But this child was also blind, right, which is the same situation as the daughter, the sister. Probably explained this very poorly. But it seems like that's why she adopted her.
Right.
She's like trying to fill this hole in her life. And then things slowly start to unravel.
Okay.
And basically, it's kind of a manipulation plot where Sally Hawkins is basically trying to make the brother seem like he's insane.
Right.
And that he has a history of like some kind of violence that isn't that bad, but he was a young disgruntled kid.
Mm.
But she like leverages that to make sure that he gets thrown out of the picture because she's got intentions with the sister.
She wants to just keep the sister for herself.
Exactly.
Okay.
And it is, look, I'll say that those directors are really good directors because the mood is set really well. The atmosphere is like brooding, tense, weird, creepy. And then the violence starts to happen where this child that's in the home, their new sibling, is very off, eh? Oh, there's something wrong with this kid.
Right.
This is her. This is Sally Hawkins' original kid.
Yeah, one of them, because the other one died. Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, so the new kids aren't the scary ones. It's the one that she has.
Yes, exactly.
Interesting.
The new kids are the victims, kind of in this situation.
Ah.
And this kid is like silent. It like kind of tries to strangle the cats a few times.
Right.
And always stands in the center of the empty pool. And like takes the can, you hear the cat like screaming, and then she's like, leave the cat alone, don't let the cat out, don't let him near the cat. And I don't know what to say without giving it away.
No, I mean, you don't have to at this point, but I mean, did you get a good vibe out of it? Like, I mean, what did you rate it?
I rated it 3 stars on Letterboxd because I felt like, in spite of it being really effective, and it truly is disturbing, like the horror that you see is very gory. Like there's a scene where a kid chews on a knife.
Right.
You know, and you see the knife like digging into his gums and stuff. And you just like, yeah, the metal on the teeth. Like it's in terms of that kind of stuff, it's like really fucking effective.
Yeah.
But I was squirming in my seat. Me of all like 34 years old, I was sitting there like. And its story is where it just falls short. Because I think my problem with it is that you always know how she's manipulating him. They show you.
Mm.
Okay, so from the protagonist's perspective, you kind of don't have any mystery to play with there in your engagement as an audience. You're kind of just like, oh, he's being made to seem insane. We know this, so we know he's a victim.
Okay.
So you don't really have anything to question.
Right.
Right?
Interesting.
And then like, it kind of plays out, and I think this is unintentional, where she's obviously the antagonist, but like, she is given so much screen time in terms of her agency.
Yes.
And then also gets an arc in the third act that the main characters don't get. So it's like she's an anti-hero protagonist, but then the kids are still the victims' protagonists. And you kind of just get confused about whose story it is.
Yes.
You know?
Okay.
But yeah, things get super fucking hectic. Nice. And yeah, it's just a disturbing film. I think that's the vibe from it. Go to be creeped out and grossed out.
Yeah. So I because I liked Talk to Me, and because I was excited about what these kinds of filmmakers could be, it was a potential Bioscope film for me, for me to pick it for the Bioscope. I didn't have a chance to watch it at this press screening that you went to, Cole. But yeah, I just don't know whether I've got... one, I don't necessarily have the space for it at the Bioscope. But if you were like, oh my God, it's fucking brilliant, then, then I would have carved out the space.
Okay.
But if you're like, it's just scary to be scary...
yes.
Then I don't have to carve out huge space for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other one I was debating as to whether or not it's a Bioscope movie is The Naked Gun.
Right.
Because I saw it coming and was like, this could be interesting. And I've seen these IndieWire quotes where it's like, this is the most important movie of the summer. Because it's like, we don't get these kinds of comedies anymore.
Yeah.
And here they're going to present this like, you know, this big comedy, and if it does well, then it's testament.
Yeah.
And so I was like, because these distributors also give you months in advance notice and say, you know, are you interested? Are you looking to take it?
Yes.
And I remember saying, let's just wait to see a trailer because I love the idea of The Naked Gun, because this is obviously famous Leslie Nielsen, quite a particular sense of comedy, but it's being rebooted by Akiva Schaffer. These are the people behind Lonely Island, who, you know, were famous in SNL for doing these SNL skits, and Lonely Island have made stuff. Like, I really loved pop star Never Stop, Never Stopping.
Yeah.
I like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I like Andy Samberg. I like that
Chip and Dale movie.
Yeah, I like that humor. Mm. It's, you know, a dick in a box, but there's something smart about it.
Yes.
So there's smarts to it. It's like it knows its humor, it's self-referential, it's all these sort of quite complex things, but presented as a dick joke. Mm. And so I was really hoping that Naked Gun could be that.
Yes.
And then the trailer came out. Because I even said to the distributor, pending a trailer, I'm keen.
Yeah.
Let's see. And then the trailer came out and I was like, this looks fucking lame.
Right.
So, Cole, what was it like?
So, you know, have you seen that clip of Leslie Nielsen going on to talk shows where he's got the fart machine?
Oh, no.
And he's busy talking on the fart machine and then he like just moves his leg across and then there's a fart in the middle of like a late night interview.
Right.
And he's just sitting there with the straight face and everyone else is killing themselves.
Yes.
It's very much that. Okay. I don't know if you remember the start of the original Naked Gun.
I, for some reason, at my age, I caught it on the third one, 33 and a third.
Oh. Okay, yes.
And I sort of appreciated it to some degree as a kid, like a very young kid. But then I don't think I really went back and watched the other two.
Okay.
I mean, the original starts with Leslie Nielsen infiltrating a meeting of all the most evil people in the world.
Right.
It's got like Yasser Arafat and Boris Johnson. Who's the Cold War guy?
Yeltsin.
Boris Yeltsin. Who's Boris Johnson?
He's the prime minister.
He's also one of the most evil people that's ever lived. And then he like beats them all up. But then it goes into a sequence where it's a camera mounted on top of a cop car with the siren. And then you're seeing it going through the streets while a title sequence plays. But then it's going through the streets and all of a sudden it's on the pavements and everyone's jumping out of the way.
Right.
And then the car is driving through a house and people are like at the dinner table, like getting out of the way and stuff.
It's like Family Guy in that it's a joke that's either too quick or too long.
Right.
And its pacing is the joke, right? It's the joke that just like keeps coming at you.
Right.
But to me, it just feels such a base level joke.
It is. So I think the entire film, what's striking is that I think spiritually, it is the perfect requel to The Naked Gun.
Because
it's both a reboot and a sequel.
Yes.
Because he's the son of Frank Drebin, who's Leslie Nielsen.
Okay, have we got a new word here? Requel.
I've heard Graham use that. That's where I got that.
I've never heard that before. That's cool.
Yeah,
that's
reboot, a nice and reboot a sequel.
Yeah.
Okay, a requel. Cool.
And it's striking how every single second, like whatever they can pull a joke out of, they do.
Right.
So it's gags from start to finish. It doesn't stop.
Okay.
So that's like how it starts to become a bit exhausting, but that's exactly what the Naked Gun was. So it's like the running gag throughout the whole movie is that cops always have a coffee. So whenever they walk into the police station, they've got coffees,
right.
And then someone hands them a coffee. So they throw their coffees on the floor and they splash everywhere. He's like, thanks. And then like later on, someone will give him a gigantic coffee that he has to hold with two hands.
Yeah.
And it's... So, like, that's the level of, like,
so
running
that's what
gag.
I'm saying. It's one joke that just runs for an hour and a half. And Sam, you know, who works here at the video store, raised a great point, which is, you know, comedy evolves.
Yeah.
And comedy changes. And there's certainly a time and a place for certain types of comedy.
Mm.
And you can see how in the 80s, Naked Gun... You know, deflating the air on movies like Die Hard and spy movies and all of that stuff was very important. We've now had decades of parody.
Right.
And our humor is always evolving.
Right.
Our humor needs to remain smart. It needs, it's interesting how it evolves.
Mm.
And so it's just interesting that you see something like IndieWire saying, this could be one of the most important movies of the year.
Yes.
As to whether or not this movie works, because people are arguing that you don't make comedies anymore and you don't see these kind of comedies anymore. And it's just, it's very interesting to see what kind of humor it is and where its place is and what kind of a success it has.
Yeah. But how referential is the humor?
And what, meaning? And what do you mean by that?
Meaning that, like, does it reference other movies a lot? Does it reference like current events? All that sort of thing. Does it draw on like that stuff of jokes?
It's, okay, that's good. Honestly, it's that literal joke.
Yes.
Where he says, take a seat. And she goes, thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
And she grabs a chair and walks out the
room. But I'm saying a lot of the comedies of like that time, of like when this kind of comedy was in its heyday, a lot of them were like parody. And the problem with that sort of thing is, I remember when I was watching like a movie every day for a year, I watched the Hot Shots movies.
Yes.
The problem with those is like half of the jokes are referencing other movies and other events that were happening at that point in time.
Yeah, you can maybe...
So they're dated as hell.
Mm.
Yes.
You know, but when it's like this sort of joke, like you're talking the running joke with the comedy, that's like... That works at any point in history.
It's like the one, my favorite gag from the movie, when they get to like the final place where things go down and a title card appears that says, and it's a stupid title card as well. It's like 33 minutes away from the big like events, whatever. Yes. And then a guy's walking across frame and then he stumbles into the title card because there are actual props in the sets.
Yes.
So it's the kind of thing where you don't expect it's going to happen. Okay. And then at the start as well, there's a bank heist. They go into a safety deposit box in the vault, and then he opens it, and then it's a hard drive that's got an acronym, PLOT device, where it's plot device.
Yes.
And then they come up with an acronym for plot device. Mm. It's like nonstop humor, and it's funny. I think what you're saying is why it was so much fun to watch, because in a cinema, we haven't had a comedy that's a comedy for comedy's sake in forever.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know, if you like really juvenile humor, like the one gag is when he's trying to sneak into a security room while the security guys are watching the TV, the CCTV monitors, and then he steps, and then the floorboard squeaks. He's like, ooh. And then he steps again, and then he steps on a duck that goes, and it goes away. And then you're waiting for the third one.
Yeah.
And you're like, what's it going to be? And then he goes, ooh, and then he slips and falls down a flight of stairs. So it's like that level of humor.
Yes.
But it's... funny. It's played so well because Liam Neeson is always serious.
Sure.
He's always playing it serious. He's never playing it funny. Unless it's like slapstick like it is.
Yes.
You know, but it's just, I can't recommend it enough personally as a film to watch. But I don't know if it's a Bioscope movie. I don't know if audiences today are going to enjoy it. But everyone I've seen online is like raving about it.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of like same thing, like positive reviews. Okay, I have a question. What is it about and does it even matter?
I mean, no,
okay.
Because that's not what it's about, really. Yes. it's just an excuse to have wall-to-wall jokes.
Okay, good.
But it's the plot to Kingsman.
Okay.
Where they have like a device that's going to make everyone violent.
Yes.
That's the plot.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Which is also the plot of the first Naked Gun.
Right.
Where it was they were going to have a device that was going to turn people into assassins, and then they were going to kill Queen Elizabeth II at a baseball game.
Right.
That's the plot of the first Naked Gun.
This is also very much striking me Anchorman energy.
Mm.
Where
but it's better than Anchorman.
No, but sure. But what Anchorman was a movie that was quite frustrating to watch, but it was very funny to quote afterwards. Yeah.
Yes.
So I think for some people, they'll maybe not enjoy it, but when you think about how ridiculous it is, you might quote it afterwards.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like when there's a car crash in the beginning and the car went off a cliff and fell into like a river and it's sitting there upside down. And they're like, okay, cool, get rid of the, let's like clean up the scene. And then all of a sudden, one of those claws from a claw machine descends into the ravine and starts to pick up the car. And they're all watching it. And then it picks it up. And then it drops it accidentally. And everyone's like, oh, damn it. And then they carry it. It's dumb, dude. Yeah. It's like any excuse to have a joke.
Cool.
Okay. Interesting.
So if you want to have a laugh, I think if you don't take yourself too seriously and you love a childish joke, go watch it.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, the Bioscope, I want to also be a place for humor. I mean, we have stand-up comedy. We line the walls with humor and laughing. But yeah, we'll see.
It definitely seems like one of those ones you have to watch either in a movie theater or at least with a group of friends.
Absolutely.
You can't watch it like on your own on a laptop in bed.
No.
Yeah.
It's not that
comedy
kind of
movie. Like that doesn't comedy like this doesn't work.
No.
When you're on your own.
No, it's about laughing with other people.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
It's the best way to watch comedy.
So yeah, another one that I bashed out this weekend.
Oh yeah.
It's such a binge thing, is Untamed.
Okay.
Untamed on Netflix.
Yeah.
Stars Eric Benner.
Right.
It's my Australian. Yeah. My Australian accent. Although he's not Australian.
Oh,
in this.
Okay.
He's very American.
Right. Because I saw the trailer and had big Australian vibes, so I was wondering if he was...
No, no. We are very, very American here.
Okay.
Ironically, with another... it's got Sam Neill in it as well.
Oh.
He's New Zealand.
I think he's New Zealand, yeah.
He's a New Zealander. So yeah, two people from that part of the world who are very much in America.
Right.
And it's very much set in Yosemite.
Okay.
Yosemite National Park.
Yes.
How old were you when you realized it was Yosemite?
It wasn't Yosemite. Yeah. I remember hearing the word and seeing the word and then like there's no relation between those two things.
It's the same as like Arkansas.
Yes.
It's not
Arkansas.
Like, it's not Arkansas.
Yes.
No.
America.
America. So this is a sort of whodunit.
Okay.
It's you can imagine what kind of a book it might have been. I don't think it's based on a book, but it's that classic mystery novel type vibe.
Right.
That makes for a good limited series.
Okay, so it's a series, not a movie.
It's a series.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a six-episoder.
Cool.
Which is nice because I'm actually starting to get a sense that the 8-episode limited series is sometimes like 2 episodes too much.
It's like a little stretched.
Where there's 1 or 2 episodes where it's like, we could have done without that.
Okay.
You're just filling it up.
Yes.
But I think 6 is good.
Mm.
It's a good arc. Basically, I'll set the scene. Yosemite is very famous for having this like incredible cliff face, which is called El Capitan.
Yes. Okay.
Where it's like, it's a sheer just fucking wall of rock.
Yeah.
And why it's worth mentioning this is because there's actually quite a lot of stuff around this rock face and El Capitan. But, and I'll get to that in a moment. But we got 2 rock climbers that are busy going up it.
Okay.
So immediately you're in this like, your legs are a bit jelly. And when they're near the top, this like, dead body just fucking plummets down and like knocks one of their ropes and almost like kills them.
Jeez.
Dead body of a girl. And then for the next 6 hours, you go into the world of who this woman is.
Mm.
How did she die? How did she get there?
Okay.
Eric Banner is like a sort of special investigations guy. He's a federal officer who works within the parks. So it's a combination of sort of park ranger duties, but something a bit more specialist.
Mm.
He's that very efficient, very good at his job cop, but is also grumpy and has a backstory.
Right. Yes.
So it's a little bit typical in that sense.
Yeah.
So we're not in sort of uncharted waters here. We've kind of seen this before.
Yeah.
But what I think is probably the nicest, strongest part of it, which usually is not a good thing to say about something,
yeah,
is that it just looks fucking beautiful.
Okay.
Usually that's a that's a little bit of a nasty comment you can say for something if you can't find something.
At least it looks nice.
Yeah. No, but in this case, like, it really is beautiful because you're in this, like, beautiful park.
Right.
But it's lovely. It's a good way to spend the weekend.
Cool.
I enjoyed it.
Nice. Yeah. So it's compelling enough to keep you going through all six.
Yeah, exactly. Good. And good, I think good. If it was two more, like, maybe you would have wandered along the way. Okay. But, like, you're held by it. The reveals. It's a unfolder.
Okay. Good.
And it unfolds well.
Good. Because the last thing you want with one of these things is to reach the end of an episode and just go, yeah, I don't care about the next one.
Yeah.
You want the end of the episode to make you go, I have to watch the next one.
Yeah.
Now.
And then are saying that there is a season two, and you're like, where would we go with that?
Okay.
Why do we need to do that? Right. Is he going to go to another park and solve another mystery? Which I guess he could.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it going to be one of those, is it sort of like the Rian Johnson...
Knives Out,
Glass Onion, that sort of thing, where it's like the same character investigating different things.
Yeah,
you can
that. I think we could do that. And it also makes sense because he is someone that would be called to a case.
Cool.
It's the same as Department Q, which was that really good Netflix show.
Yeah.
Where, like, they are going to be this cold case department based in the basement. And so they are going to pull out these cases. They are surrounded by the cases. So it makes some sense.
Cool.
So yeah, nice. That is Untamed on Netflix.
Nice. Yeah, I like Eric Banner. I think he's underrated.
Yeah, he's cool.
Yeah.
No, and he's in his, like, Silver Fox era.
Yeah. It's also nice seeing Sam Neill in things. He's also a very good actor that's kind of low-key.
Yeah.
He's going to be in the next Godzilla movie.
What's that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Cole, why are you so quiet?
I guess I didn't have anything interesting to say. Sorry. I just enjoyed listening to the sound of Russell's voice.
Well, there you go.
Oh, thank you.
Talking about Eric Banner.
Yeah, old Eric Banner. Any excuse to do an Australian accent? Magic, thank you, guys.
Yes.
What a lovely day.
Mm.
We really appreciate you, and thanks for listening thus far.
Mm.
We've got, good movies this month, man.
Yeah.
There's some cool stuff to talk about.
Nice.
So it'll be nice to keep talking about court stealing, as we said.
Mm.
But we've got Weapons coming up.
Yeah.
We've got Together.
Oh, yeah.
Coming up. There's good stuff.
Yes. Sketch looks kind of interesting.
Sketch looks interesting for, like, a sort of more family.
Yeah. Could be more viewing. Of a, yeah.
No, I think we got a good year for cinema this year. And so it's cool.
Yeah.
It's nice that it's a broad thing from... Naked Gun to these YouTubers making crazy horrors.
Yeah.
There's cool stuff. All right, Magic. The home base is thevideostore.co.za. And you can always chime in. Leave us comments on anything that you're returning or anything that we've said on this show. And also a place like Facebook. The Facebook group is always a nice place to chime in.
Yeah.
And it's nice. We're getting some other folks that are doing some Hey Did You Guys Sees.
Oh, nice.
And returning, and so
cool.
Lovely. Cool, Magic. Thank you, guys.
Mm.
Hell yeah.
See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.